Okay, so a few pieces of business before we get started. You should have received the email about me the other day, but reminding you to order your kit from SparkFun. Who has ordered their kit? Most of you. Good. Make sure you get it ordered. I think the USB cable was in low stock. Maybe it's out of stock by now, but you can find. You have a micro USB cable, it will work. Nothing special about that one at SparkFun. Just head there for completeness. Yes?
How long does
SparkFun is usually pretty quick. They'll ship the same day quite often, and then less than a week to get here. But just want to make sure that as you order it, things don't go out of stock, and then we're waiting for half of you to get stuff in. So that's why I'm kind of pushing on you to order it now, even though we're not working on it for a couple days or a couple weeks. Right, so that way, if something goes out of stock, we have time for it to get back in stock and people to get it. So yeah, should get it pretty quickly after you've ordered it. Less than a week, I would say, from those guys. They're pretty good usually. What else? Reports due tomorrow for your spaghetti tower, right? By 5 p.m. Make sure they are named correctly. Make sure your email subject is correct. Make sure all your teammates are copied on your email. Okay. Those are requirements for a full credit submission. Okay. All that correct by 5 p.m. tomorrow. Okay. There's a few reasons we asked for that. One sec. A few reasons we asked for that. Think of it in terms of this class. Your customer is demanding that you name your file a certain way and structure your email a certain way. So meet your customer demands on that naming. All right, question.
Okay, so what if you had a teammate who never showed up to class ever and still hasn't shown up?
So if you haven't had a teammate, what you should do that didn't show up, you should submit, still include them. They're still your teammate, whether they're here or not. You can email me separately and let me know that they never showed up and never did anything. Okay, I haven't checked the roster this week. It could be possible they dropped, but I haven't checked recently. So we can check that out. But otherwise, they're still on your team.
Okay.
Yep. Other questions? Yes.
Okay, so you mentioned in your like outline that we have to give a computer-generated sketch of whatever project that we're doing
yep.
for a particular report.
Yep.
And you suggested in one of your project things, I forgot which one exactly it is, sorry.
Yep.
To use iDraw, but you know I don't have a Mac computer, so
sure. So were you the gentleman that emailed me about that? Yes. Okay. So thanks for asking for the whole class to hear. So you should have got a response. You got a response, right?
I don't know.
Okay. So I replied pretty quickly to that one. So the question, I guess, let me answer that more generally. Do you need computer-generated graphics? Yes. Right. That does not also mean I drew it on a piece of engineering paper and took a picture of it and now it's in the figure. All right. What that means, though, in terms of this project, and let's see, there's some of the notes you were intended to review last week. On Tuesday, there's a whole lecture about drawing figures, what kind of figures you need to generate, examples of both good and bad figures for this class. You do not need full CAD renders of your drawings, right? You don't need full detailed drawings of your designs. And I mean not full detailed drawings in that you don't, you know, for a spaghetti tower, this doesn't make sense, but you don't need to tell me what size bolt you need or what the actual threads are or actually what's the exact dimension of the nut you need to use to fasten these things together, right? The drawings you generate in this class need to convey the functionality of a design, right? They're conceptual level sketches, right? They're not detailed CAD drawings you could hand over to a machine shop and they could make it for you. So that's the measure of, is the drawing good enough or not? So could you hand it to someone and they understand how the thing works? Or what's the functionality of the design? So in that sense, your spaghetti tower, spaghetti are just straight lines, right? Tape is some other different color or something maybe, right? So iDraw, now it's called Graphic, is the one my lab uses for these kind of drawings. It's what we call a vector graphics application, okay? There's a free vector graphics application called Inkscape that's surprisingly good. It's free and open source. It's essentially a copy of Adobe Illustrator, which I think as students, you guys can get Illustrator for free as well. Those Illustrators way overkill, hold on, way overkill for what you need, effectively. So students in the past have effectively used the drawing tools in PowerPoint, right? You need boxes and circles and lines and arrows to make the kind of drawings you need in this class, okay? If you have questions about the quality of those figures you need, take a look at the lecture notes from last Tuesday. Okay. There's audio associated with that too. You can listen to that whole lecture there and get an idea. Okay, there was a question in the middle here. Yes, sir. Inkscape. It's free open source, available Windows, Mac, Linux, whatever you need. There's also a couple free kind of light CAD programs that would be good. They're not full-featured CAD programs. There's Tinkercad. It's not too bad. Pretty easy to use. There's SketchUp by Google. But there's a free version of that as well. That, again, you need boxes and circles and ellipses and squares and things. Right? It's the kind of level of drawing you need to convey the functionality of how does this thing work. Okay. Make sure on your figures things are labeled according to their function, etc. Right. So there's examples in the notes, again, for how you got to go about that. Right. So for your spaghetti tower, spaghetti is not a good label. Right. So you need to label the parts on your figures. Right. It doesn't tell me anything about what that spaghetti is doing. Right. Horizontal spaghetti truss or whatever. That tells you the functionality of that piece. Right. That's what you want to convey in the labels on the drawings. Right. Make sure you give enough dimensions. So we said we don't need detailed drawings. You do need to provide enough dimensions on the drawings to give it scale, however. So we don't need to know like thread size or anything like that, but you do need to know whether this thing is 18 inches or 18 feet. Right? You need to give your reader enough sense of scale, enough dimensions to get sense of scale. Okay. So a spaghetti tower drawing can be a bunch of lines that are representing spaghetti in the geometry that they work, with everything labeled according to its function. That's a good enough drawing. Okay, there's a question in the back over there, I think.
My question was it was answered.
Okay.
Was it Inkscape?
Yeah, Inkscape. I think it's inkscape.org is the website.
I didn't hear it.
Yeah, sure. I think for spaghetti, totally easy drawings. You'll develop a little bit of skill. The sketching tools in PowerPoint or Word or whatever are good enough to get you where you need. Maybe probably not as easy to use as Inkscape, because Inkscape lets you put in dimensions and things if you want. But you do need computer-generated drawings. You probably also noticed in the handout for the assignment, and it's on every outline in the assignment, and in the pre-submission checklist, which we'll talk about in just a second, that you can have photos, right? You'll have photos of your spaghetti tower, right? You can have those, and you can include those in your report, but they do not replace the actual drawings. The reason for that is, one, it's really hard to take good technical photos, right? There's people that get paid professionally to do that, have professional lighting, things like that. You're not going to get one out of your cell phone. Right. And also, technical figures, pictures will have a lot of information that's not important at all to your reader's understanding of your tower. So a sketch is a better medium to communicate how this tower actually looks than a picture would be. Right? In terms of the engineering functionality of the tower. The aesthetics and things like that, yeah, maybe a picture can help you there. Okay. I mentioned the pre-submission checklist. Make sure you go through that before you submit your report. That's effectively what we run down when we're looking at your reports. It's pretty extensive. It's a long list. Leave yourself some time. Look at that and address it. It's linked from the class webpage. Pre-submission checklist, it actually has leaving little boxes where you can print out a copy and check it. I might recommend you do that. All right, if you are not making any of the mistakes or you're doing everything in that checklist, you're going to be okay in your report. All right, other questions? If you haven't already, do review those lectures from last Tuesday. Right, they're posted. There's video of the actual technical writing, a technical presentation one. You won't have a presentation for a little while, but it's there. There's one for generating figures, and there's one for documenting sources if you're using external sources. You need to look at those. Other questions? Okay, so today we're going to continue our march through looking at the design process and the tools we have to make our design process more objective, more of an engineering process rather than one coming from some kind of gut feeling about what might work. Okay, and today we're going to look at concept generation and evaluation, and then kind of as an extension of that, concept selection perhaps. Excuse me. We'll start by a review of the phases of the design process. What's the first phase of the design process? It hurts. Yeah, understanding the problem, a problem understanding, right? And what we're stressing throughout the semester, and we'll continue to stress, is that this is perhaps the most crucial phase of the design process. If you don't understand the problem you're trying to solve, it doesn't really matter how good your design is, right? It's not solving the problem your customer cares about. Okay? What's next? Specification development. That's right. So taking our understanding of the problem and from that, trying to distill out some engineering specs. All right. What's next? Conceptual design. So that's actually from those engineering specifications, and what we'll talk about another piece of the spec development called functions, function tree. From that, I start developing what are the actual ideas I have to solve this problem. So you get all the way to step three before you should be sketching a single thing. Right? That's going to be hard to do. Okay? But that's kind of, you want to get there. You can sketch, but know that if you start sketching on day one, you don't understand the problem well enough for those sketches to really be meaningful, other than to help you think about the problem. Okay? What's after conceptual design? Detailed design. So that is taking your kind of best concept, let's say, your selected concept, your recommended concept, your chosen concept, and figuring out all the details of it. Like, so for us, we get the conceptual design, and I say I don't care about what size bolt you need, because we're stopping at step three effectively in this class. Right? Step four is when you figure out what size bolt do I need? What's the actual gear ratio I need? Exactly what motor do I need? Right, as detail design, exactly what material properties do I need my product to have? Right. What's after detail design? Right, so I have a detail design, I've developed a design that I think is going to be the one we want to produce. I start developing kind of the manufacturing specifications. Right. These are the tolerances on these parts, this is what it's going to take to get made, this is how we should make a certain part. Once I've done that, I can get to actually manufacturing the thing. And then we want to think about the disposal of our product as well. Right? Companies are increasingly responsible for taking back everything they produce. Okay. Or being. So kind of steps four and five, we talk about them being part of machine design or your manufacturing course. And steps one to three is primarily what we're talking about in here. And yeah, we're going to build a design, but you can think about that as a prototype in the conceptual design phase. Right? We never get to the detailed design. We're not talking about how to pick out gears or what size bolt you need or what material you need. Right? We're getting to how do we develop functional concepts that can solve a problem. Okay. And we'll keep pointing out as well that this entire process is iterative. Meaning you don't do step one, understand your problem, and then forget about it and move on to step two. Right? You should always be trying to understand your problem better, always be trying to understand your specs and refining your specs. Always be trying to refine your concepts. Right? This is especially true for steps one, two, three. You can kind of think of one, two, three forming a loop, and I'm just doing this over and over and over until I get to some kind of final design that I want to develop the detailed specs for and manufacture. Okay. So for most of today, we'll talk about the conceptual design phase, step three here. Let's look at these phases of the design process in terms of the tools that you're going to use. Right? Starting first with problem understanding. What tools do we have to aid us in understanding the problem so far? House of quality. And as an extension, the middle part of that house of quality, which we call the problem understanding form. Right, that's the middle part of that house of quality. Specification development, what do we have there? Heard somebody say it. Yeah, spec sheet, specification sheet. Right. We have another one we're going to learn about today, we didn't get to last time, called the function tree. And the function tree kind of, you can think about it in specification development, it also can kind of live in between steps two and three. There's a few ways you can think about it. Conceptual design is what we're going to discuss today, and you're going to learn about the morphological chart and what we call concept evaluation matrices. Right? So how do I take some ideas I have and evaluate objectively which one of these is better? Okay. Again, this entire process, this is the guts of this class, if you will. Right? These three steps of the process, these tools, and then taking this and iterating on it like crazy. All right, so let's review the ones we've seen already quickly. Okay? It's a problem understanding forum. Again, it's the middle part of that house of quality. Okay? Customer requirements, right? So understanding what your kind of aggregate customer wants. Remember we talked about you're going to have lots of different customers for your products, lots of different customers for your designs. It's up to you to distill out some kind of coherent list of customer requirements for a representative customer of all those. This is where you're going to need some engineering judgment. You know, probably in a company, you're going to have some other teams that are good at marketing research and telling you these things and helping you do that process. Okay. What are the engineering characteristics? Measurables of what? Measurables of the customer requirements. Pretty close. So if I'm going to think about this, basically, I'm going to measurable characteristics of the design to determine whether I'm meeting the customer requirements or not. We're pretty close. So one way kind of to remember this, if someone came up to you, you knew your customer requirements and set a design down on the table in front of you, what could you measure about it to determine whether it was meeting customer requirements or not? Those are engineering characteristics. What are engineering properties I can measure about some design to know whether it meets the customer requirements or not? Okay. Should these have numerical targets associated with them? Have some votes for yes, have some votes for no. Yeah, so do I say length equals 18 inches here for engineering characteristics? No, right? In engineering characteristics, you might provide a direction. I want to maximize length or minimize length, but you don't have numerical targets here. These are just the actual measurement itself. Total length of device is an engineering characteristic. Okay, everybody follow that? Okay. Measurable characteristics of design. And then in the middle, basically, how do each one of these engineering characteristics relate to what the customer requires? Right, so if you're going through the process like we just talked through, you're probably going to have a pretty strong diagonal. But then you need to march through each other relationship. So take a customer requirement and look through the engineering characteristics and map out their relationship, like we did, went through that example last time. Going to review these quickly. Remember that you need to explicitly identify your customers. Kind of what we did walk through in class for the example, list everything that every one of your customers cares about. Right, that's the first step here. And then you need to take those things and kind of come up with your aggregate customer. Who's represented? Which of my customers is most important? All these kind of things. Right? Then you need to take each point of that kind of resulting aggregate list and say, what does that really mean? What is my customer really asking for when they tell me they want that? Okay. Do they really want a faster horse? Or do they just want to get from point A to point B faster? Okay. So you're trying to really understand the customer's motivation for asking you for that thing. What are they really asking for? All right. So we went through some examples, like, you know, you could have reliable on most every house of quality on the planet. Well, what do you really mean when you say reliable for this design, this problem we're addressing? Is it that it works 99.9% of the time? Is it it can survive and still work okay if you're not using it exactly right? Does it mean that it doesn't need much training for it to work well? That's kind of a measure of reliable, maybe. Easy to use is another one that could be on almost every house of quality on the whole planet. Right? But what does it mean for this problem I'm addressing, for the thing that the voltage resulting design to be easy to use? These are the questions. Like, this is what I mean by asking, what is the customer really asking for when they tell you, this thing needs to be easy to use? What do they really mean by that in terms of this design problem? Okay. Once you have that good list, and really distill those down to meaningful things for this problem, look at each one of those and say, well, what could I measure to know whether I'm addressing that or not? Okay. So if we've distilled out and said, well, my customer, when they say easy to use, really means they want a low number of steps. Kind of said that for your spaghetti tower, right? Low number of steps in the instructions. Well, if I'm going to measure that my customer is asking for a low number of steps, I could count the number of steps, right? So I have an engineering characteristic that measures whether I'm meeting this customer need or not. Okay. And then you need to be revisiting this whole process regularly as your understanding of the problem improves over time. You're going to understand more about a problem 6 months into the design process than you did on day one. Right. So this needs to be updated as your understanding improves. Talked about the correlation matrix, the kind of roof of the house of quality. What does the correlation matrix do for us? Yeah, so relates the engineering characteristics to one another. Right. So what it's showing you is basically, if I'm improving one characteristic towards its goal, how does that affect my ability to push the others towards their goal? Okay, here's our spec sheet. Okay, requirements kind of obviously go in the middle here. You do want to sort them by category. We had the whole list of categories on Tuesday's lecture. All right, it'll make it easy to find specs. We'll make it easy to define addressing those to divide addressing those specs between your team. Right? Make sure you meet them. It's easy for your reader to go see and sort through them if they're organized. Okay. What's the D/W column about? Demands or wishes, wants. What does that mean? Yeah, right. So demand, right? So it's kind of demand or wish, demand or want. Demand is, if we don't satisfy this spec, the product is dead. Right? It's illegal. We're not going to be able to sell it, whatever. Right? It has to meet this in order to be a viable product. The wish or want means, well, this is actually the goal we want to be able to hit if we can, if it's possible. Okay. Can you have demands and wants, wishes for the same kind of category or same type of spec?
Yes.
Yes. And quite often you do. And nearly always, if you have a demand, there's probably some spec, some kind of safety factor away from that demand. Right. That source column is the source of the requirement that you have there. So that could be some kind of federal standard, could be contest rules or something in terms of this class. Right. Could be the engineering analysis. Right. And then you want to keep track of who's responsible. And what was the last time that spec changed? And again, this will be evolving over time. Specs will get refined. Right? It's really easy. For example, what's a key kind of thing that has to be in common for all these specs? Do these have numerical targets? Specs. Every spec in the spec sheet has to have a numerical target. So those numerical targets are one of the prime things that get revised over time. You might start earlier in the design process with a back of the envelope, kind of physics, high school physics calculation to get some bounds. And okay, this is a viable process, start doing more detailed engineering analysis to narrow those bounds on what the real spec actually is. So you can update the time of your last update goes here, the date of your last update. So, kind of our process here, take every one of those engineering characteristics we developed. We've said those are things I can measure about a design to see if it's meeting the customer requirements, and then assign some kind of numerical target for it. Right? So we talked through this one already. So the customer's saying, I want low number of steps. You've had engineering characteristic that I can measure the number of assembly steps. A specification that will result in that is something like number of assembly steps less than 15. You might measure top speed. Your customer said, I want my car to be fast. And you've determined, well, they mean top speed when they tell me it wants to be fast. So I'm measuring top speed. To set a spec on that, I might say the top speed of my car better be greater than 160. Right. or I can measure the maximum acceleration to address my original customer need when they tell me it needs to be fast. Maybe they mean acceleration. So I can define a 0 to 60 time as a measure of the car's acceleration, right? Instead of target for it, less than 3 seconds, let's say. Right. And you can march through every one of your different engineering requirements, and you set a numerical target. If I can measure this about the design, what should that measure be in order to be successful? Okay. Once you have that list, then you can think about, well, which of these are demands and which are wishes or wants. And then I think the next step explicit as well is, if you determine something as a demand, is there an accompanying spec that's a wish or want? Right. So if the system has to be less than 12 inches, that's a demand. Maybe we want it to be 11 or 10 and a half or whatever. Okay. And again, just like the house of quality, you need to revisit this regularly. Your understanding of the problem will improve. You'll be doing more in engineering analysis to narrow the bounds on the specs, those kind of things. Okay. So short review of what we just talked about on Tuesday. Questions about those two. Those are the kind of foundational work to get us rolling in the design process. Nobody. All right. Next tool we're going to talk about is the function tree. This one is the one that seems to give people the most trouble. So let's talk about it. The idea is to take some kind of large, difficult design process and basically to break it into smaller, manageable chunks. Right? Designing a car is impossible. Okay? Designing a door handle for a car, designing a functional way to open the door, that's a more manageable project. I can design a way for my passenger to get in and out. I can design a way to move forward and backwards. These kind of things. So essentially, we're trying to break down something really complex, kind of your main product function, let's say, and break that down into smaller, more manageable things we can do. Right? And you keep breaking it down and keep breaking it down until that lowest level is something that you want to get to that's almost trivial. Right? Something you could come up with 15 ideas right off the top of your head how to solve that little tiny function. Okay? So for your final project, you might have a lowest level subfunction that's move forward. Well, how could I move forward? What are 15 different ideas I can move forward? I could walk, I could run, I could roll, I could jump, I could have some kind of extending arm. Right? It's a trivial problem. I can come up with ideas quickly. And that's what you want. You want to get down to that lowest level of things here, okay? On this lowest level. You will have more subfunctions that way at the first level, and you're going to have a lot more in the vertical direction as well. So just as a reminder, the tools, the size of the tools you see in the lecture, the size of the tools you see in the book are way smaller than what you should be generating for any design. Right? They're small so that they fit on lecture, fit in the book. Okay. So what are these functions actually? You want to make sure that functions that show up in your function tree are things the design is capable of doing. Right? What does the design have to do? Action verbs show up in a function tree. Okay? Make sure that the levels in the function tree are not chronological order of the way things have to happen. It's not a flow chart. Each level of that function tree is complexity. So things that are lower down the function tree are less complex than the level above them. They don't necessarily occur later in time. Okay. The functions in a function tree are not solution specific. Right? So a function at the conceptual level phase where we're working is not move arm 180 degrees. That is a function that's specific to a particular solution. Right? These are functions that have to apply to any design you develop to address the problem you're solving. Okay? There also shouldn't have constraints or specs in the function tree. If you end up with a lot of be verbs in your function tree, you're just rewriting your spec sheet in a different form. Right? Remember, this is things your design or any design to solve your problem has to do. Right? We say they have to be solution neutral, and they have to be activities. Action verbs is what we want to look for. Move forward, move left, move right, move backwards. Right? Those are functions. Okay. So what's the process to create one of these things? Like a lot of these tools, the function tree part is a nice way to collect all that data and think about it. Right? I quite often will just start, like we did for the House of Quality and Spec Sheet, we'll just list. And then I'll order them into something that's graphically sorts them. So start by listing the main function of your device or your design. Right? What's the main functionality this design has to have? So you might have, for your final project, win the MECI 201 final contest. That's the main function of your design you're going to come up with in this class. Right? You might be designing some kind of robot, and the main function of it is to fold washed laundry. Right? You take that high-level main functionality of the device and divide it down into smaller things. So taking our laundry example, right? What's the next level down? So the main objective of this device is to fold washed laundry. Well, think about, if that's the objective, what else does it have to do in order to achieve our main objective? Right? So maybe it has to find some kind of laundry pile, right? It has to move towards the laundry pile in some way. It has to fold each piece of laundry, and you keep going down like that. What does the device have to do in order to satisfy the one above? Once you get that kind of highest level, next list of high-level subfunctions, you take each one of those, and you need to list again, what are the subfunctions I have to accomplish in order to achieve each one of those subfunctions? Okay? So if we had one of our kind of high-level subfunctions being fold each piece of laundry, what do I need to do, given a laundry pile in front of me, to fold each piece of laundry? Anybody? Grab it would be a sub-function, sure. Locate it, sure. Right? What else? It's more than that. Yeah, so figure out what kind of piece of laundry I'm actually picking up. Is it a towel or is it a t-shirt? Calculate some kind of distance maybe, sure. So you can start thinking through the functions in that way. So you kind of are implying this. We need to be able to, given a pile of laundry, somehow recognize what defines each individual piece. I think that's a subfunction, right? Given that I can find the boundaries, then maybe I can do some kind of calculation to calculate what kind of type of laundry am I looking at, each one of those pieces. I probably need to have some kind of global planning algorithm. So I need to identify not just one piece and fold it, but I probably want to identify all the pieces I can see to plan out what order of steps I'm going to do everything in. Right? So once I've had that kind of catalog, I probably need to plan the order that I'm going to fold things in. Right? Once I've planned it, I probably need to actually move towards the piece of laundry I'm going to fold first. And so somebody had a function of grab it. Was that you? Yeah, so a couple of folks said grab it. Well, grab it implies a little bit about your design. Right? Grab implies you're going to use some kind of gripper or something, right? Do you need a gripper necessarily to fold a piece of laundry? Not necessarily, right? So you need to think about, and we want to use what you're doing and what you're trying to do when you think about these subfunctions is make them general, right? Any idea I came up with. So maybe I need a gripper, maybe something else. I'm going to say instead of grab, let's say maybe interface with the individual laundry piece. All right, so maybe it's not grabbing, but it holds on to it some other way. Right? And actually, you see there's some of these for sale, by the way, laundry folders. Usually you drop the stuff in the top, and it pops out the bottom. So they're not actually using. Grasping is hard. Robotic hands and fingers are hard to do. So interface is better anyway. All right. So once you've interfaced with an individual laundry piece, then, well, maybe I probably need to, I figured out what kind it was. I needed to calculate and load, restore the actually algorithm to fold that piece of laundry, that particular type of laundry. Right? And I keep thinking through the process that way. Notice that none of these say, we got away from grab. We didn't say roll towards laundry. We didn't say move arm towards laundry. Right? It's move. It's a general function that any idea we came up with for this laundry folding robot is going to have to move towards a laundry piece in some way. We haven't said how that's going to happen yet. So these are solution neutral, we say. There's no information about how we're going to solve these things in the function tree. It's just these are the things we have to do. Okay? Now we'll have a list of kind of next level down subfunctions. What do you think we do now? Yeah, take each one of these guys, and we'll actually, what do I have to do now to accomplish that function? Okay? So move to an individual laundry piece, let's say, for example. What do I have to do in order to move to an individual laundry piece? Be able to move in the first place, sure. But think about what defines that? What are the functions I have to do in order to be able to move? What's that?
To know where it is.
Sure. I think you guys are hinting at these. I think the first thing you're going to have to do is sense your surrounding environment in some way. Right? If I'm going to move to a laundry piece, I need to know kind of what's around me. How can I actually get there? So I need to probably sense what's going on around me. Right? In doing so, I probably need to take that sensory information and identify any kind of obstacles there that might be in the way. Maybe this robot's in a standard home laundry room and there's a big jug of Tide in the way. So I can't take that path to the laundry. Right? So I might need to identify obstacles. Right? What else might I need to do? Sure, so I would say there's actually a half step before that, but we'll have that one in a second. Or another function that's kind of related to that. Sure, so we can kind of go through that. I think probably you need to take, we said at a higher level you have some kind of database of the laundry. I think you need to identify what piece of laundry am I going to get on this trip to the laundry pile, and what's its current orientation? How am I actually going to interface with it? And then once I have that information, I know the environment, I've identified any kind of obstacles in the way, I know the orientation I need to get to when I get to the pile, then I can probably calculate my trajectory to get there somehow. Okay. And then, you should actually start moving, et cetera. Move forward, that kind of thing. Okay. What do you think you do next? Keep going. So take each one of these. What do I need to accomplish in order to satisfy this function? Okay. What do I need to accomplish in order to identify obstacles in my workspace? What are the subfunctions of identifying the orientation of a piece of laundry? No, right. So one kind of check, once you get to your full function tree, which again, as you probably saw in those few slides, is going to be way bigger than this one. Right. You can look and sketch it out and plan it out this way, right? So you have each one of those subfunctions we developed into this kind of chart. And basically, the check for you is to make sure that whatever you have at this level, they represent the complete set of subfunctions necessary to satisfy that function, the one above it. Okay? In other words, if I do these three things, right, I will have done that one. Okay? And if I do these three things, I would have done that. And if I do these three things, then I've satisfied my main product functionality. Okay, everybody following? Yes. So that's the check that you've got everything laid out correctly. All right. Real quick, two kind of warning signs. If you get to a function tree sketched out, and you have, say I had one drop-down box, one box, one box, one box, one box, one box, all the way down. All right. That's a symptom of two different mistakes you've made, possibly. One is that you transition into kind of flowchart land. Right? Remember, this is not a chronological ordering. These are by complexity. Right? Or you're just saying the exact same function over and over again, just different words. Right? If it only takes one subfunction to do that, then the things are equivalent functionally. Right? So if you single kind of drop down, box, 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 just one all the way down, you need to take a look and edit your function tree, see what's happening there. Probably making one of those two common mistakes. Right? Remember, these orders are by complexity, not by time. They're not chronological order, complexity. Okay, questions about the function tree? Yeah, so this one, I drew this. I think this is drawn just with the tools, and I use Keynote on the Mac, but PowerPoint has these boxes too. It's not a flowchart, but you probably could use flowchart tools to center your blocks and everything. Most drawing tools will allow you to draw lines that snap to center of things. Yeah. That's pretty easy to do. So it's a few different ways you can go after getting a nice looking flowchart, or a nice looking function tree, sorry. Other questions? So we got down to function trees. If we've worked really hard here, we've gotten down to a set of subfunctions down at the lowest level that we think we can design for. Right, that's kind of the objective here, is to get down to simple subfunctions. What I'm going to do then, what we're going to do is take that lowest level of subfunctions, these simple things we got down to, and just list them in the left-hand column of this tool. Right? So everything in this column is that lowest level of things from the function tree. Right? Copy those, paste them exactly. Okay. Then for each one of those ideas, right, we said we need to get down to subfunctions where I can come up with 12 or 15 ideas right off the top of my head. Right? This could be move forward, I could roll, I could walk, I could jump, I could fly. Right? I can come up with a bunch of different ideas really, really quickly. Right? So that's what goes in each one of these guys. For every subfunction you've developed. Alright? For each of those ideas, you want a small little sketch. Okay? These can be clip art, for example. Right? If you have some kind of clip art library and you want to fly, you can put a little airplane, whatever. Right? Make sure if you're using clip art that you cite the source of the library you're using. Right? The reason you want sketches here, rather than just words, is that you can look at this, and the reason we use symbols in the house of quality rather than numbers in the actual house of quality, the middle part, is you can look at it and get a visual representation of your process. Right? We're visual beings, right? We see things. We can process visual information more quickly than we can reading for these kind of tools. So if you have all your ideas sketched out, you can see the relationships much easier than if it's words everywhere. Okay? You can convey that to someone else much easier. Same thing in the house of quality. That's why we use symbols there. Okay. Then, once I have N ideas for my M different subfunctions, I can start looking at this chart, particularly if it's nice little clip art figures and everything, little sketches, and say, well, if I take maybe idea 1 for subfunction 2 and idea 3 for subfunction 2, and I march through all of them that way and combine them in a clever way, I can come up with an alternative design. Right? So I can start to look at the morphological chart, and while we have sketches, I can see how the things would work together to build the total design. And, well, that's kind of one idea, but maybe we could do it a different way. Right? Maybe I could take this kind of route through the different subfunctions, and I have a second alternative design. Right? And we said from the function tree that if I do all of these things, right, back up the chart, I've satisfied the main functionality of my problem. So if I have a good solution to each one of these things, and I've picked that path through the morphological chart where everything works together, then each of these designs are satisfying my overall product functionality. Okay, so we have alternative concepts. A few things to consider. We just kind of showed two of them, right? All these alternative concepts, if you follow the process we've just described, satisfy the same set of customer requirements. They satisfy the same specifications. They satisfy the same functional requirements. So we're not doing a process where, oh, I could design this product for this kind of customer or that product for that other kind of customer, right? The alternative concepts we're talking about are all for the same customer, the same set of specs, the same functionality. Okay? And the goal is to come up with as many, you know, a lot of really good, unique concepts, right? Oh, our kind of concept number two is just like one, except it's red instead of blue. That's not a different concept. That's not a different design. It's a variation on the same one. Even as far as, oh, our concept number three is just like concept number two, except the wheels are 10% smaller. Right? That's not a different concept. It's not a different design. It's a variation on the same design. Right? So what you want to get to at this part, at the conceptual design phase, is unique, kind of true alternatives. They're different functionally. They work different ways. Right? And you want those all to be good enough so that choosing the best out of those is really hard to do. Right? They should all be good designs. Okay? So we're saying we want to get to this place and choosing a final one is hard to do. That should kind of raise a natural question. Well, how should we choose which one of the alternatives is best? Any ideas? What's that?
Coin toss.
Coin toss, maybe. I think we do a little better than that, usually. Test them. I think testing is going to be a part of what we talk about, a big part of that process. Testing will support our choice. Is it realistic? That is probably in support of our choice as well. Well, what's the ultimate goal of this product, this thing we're designing? It's basically on the board here. Yeah, satisfy the customer requirements. And in that house of quality, we also picked out ways we can measure whether we're satisfying those customer requirements or not, right? So I did all that hard work figuring out who my customer were and what they're asking for. Well, I probably should use that stuff. So I take my problem understanding form, again, yours will be much, much bigger than this, and I look at those customer requirements, and that's what I'm going to use. Right? I take those customer requirements straight out of my house of quality. And I'm going to drop them in a tool called the evaluation matrix. Okay? Left-hand column of the evaluation matrix. Okay? Worked really hard to get them. Use them, right? That's, you said from the beginning that's what's going to determine whether this thing is successful or not. Okay. The customer requirements. Then across the top of this chart, you're going to have your N different alternative concepts. Unique, true alternatives. Okay. So let's actually skip that. A lot of time. For the first level matrix, what you're going to do is choose one of your alternative concepts to be what we call a datum. This is our benchmark system. Right? So if I was going to design a cell phone, I probably would pick iPhone 10 or Samsung Note 8 or whatever the best-selling phone in the world is right now, or maybe the top-rated or whatever. Right? So you could choose an external product here, or you could choose one of your own designs. Or maybe your company has an existing product that's trying to solve this design, this problem. That could be kind of your benchmark you're going to compare everything against. Okay? I'm going to call that the datum. For us, let's look at maybe an example. We're going to do a first level evaluation matrix for some dessert. Right? This works just as well for this kind of thing. Right? And well, I have some other alternatives for my dessert. Cookies and ice cream and fruit and stuff. Okay. For the first level evaluation matrix, all we're going to do for each one of our customer requirements and each design, is look at it and say, is it better or worse or the same as my datum? Right? So this is a first level because it's just that simple comparison. Is it better, the same, or worse than my datum? So for whatever customer requirement number one is a cookie better or worse or the same as ice cream? I don't know, in this case, maybe it's the same. I don't know, is it whatever that customer requirement happens to be. You march through. Is a strawberry better or worse or the same as ice cream? It's going to be worse. No matter what that customer requirement is. And you just keep marching through your table that way. Okay? Second customer requirement, better, the same, or worse. Right? And you end up with something like this. Okay? So this can give you an idea, just kind of looking at it, not even doing any kind of numerical analysis of this yet, one sec, and see, well, which one of these looks viable? The strawberry's better at three things in the datum. That's probably pretty good. Question.
So, you know, we're still in the design phase here. So is it possible, you know, you take these designs and you look, you're comparing them to your customer requirements, is it possible to come up, like, with a fifth option that has more of the options that you want?
Yes. So that's exactly right. So the question is, maybe more generally, am I fixed in this set of five designs once I get to this phase? No. Right? And if you look at these matrices, notice that we don't call them concept selection matrices. They're concept evaluation. Right? And you kind of beat me to one of my main points about these tools, is that this will tell us, well, I can look at strawberry and say, well, strawberry is doing these three things really well and better than my ice cream. Could I take one of those properties of a strawberry and do that for ice cream? Right? It makes a little bit less sense in this example, but you look at that, it allows you to evaluate the concepts, see which ones are doing well at different areas, and maybe take that idea from that concept and put it into a different one. Smash two of them together and see if it does better. Maybe I could take the chocolate bar and the strawberry together, and then we're doing better than either one of those individually. Chocolate-covered strawberries. That's pretty good, actually. Yeah. So you're coming up, so the question was my datum. Well, how do I know how well the datum is doing? Right. And here, you don't really. Right. And that's one weakness of this first level evaluation matrix. All you're able to say, and all you are saying in this level matrix, is whether the alternatives are the better, worse, or the same as the datum. Right. So that's why I say if you're going into an existing market, you might want to choose the most popular product that's already for sale in that market, or the best selling or the most profitable or something like that. Right? So you have some feel for how well the datum is doing. Right? We can get numbers, of course. So we saw the kind of one weakness of this, actually, is if you look at our total, there's no differentiation in the importance of those customer requirements. So while strawberry is better at these three things, if these are three things that my customer doesn't care as much about as the first value, then maybe the strawberry is actually a worse choice than the ice cream. Okay, so we're missing out that piece of information right now. We're also missing whether the datum's any good or not. Right? We also are missing whether kind of some indication of the magnitude of whether how much better is it. If we're better than the datum, is it a little bit better? Is it a lot better? If we're worse, is it a little bit worse or a lot worse? Okay. So that leads into our second level evaluation matrix. So in this case, we kind of do away with that idea of the datum. We're going to evaluate each one on some kind of numeric scale. Okay. So I take my first customer requirement. Now I'm able to say, well, how well does vanilla ice cream, I guess in this picture, meet that customer requirement? And I want to give it some kind of numerical scale, numerical value to dictate that. So then that kind of raises the question, what kind of scale should I use? Anybody? Something graphical you can see? Sure. Some kind of numerical scale, yeah. I think that's a good idea. That's what we want to do here. So we could have symbols that represent some numbers, probably. Might be a good idea. So I'm kind of waiting, hold on to the idea. We're going to get to that in 3 minutes. So yeah, hold on to kind of, this number should reflect how well it's meeting the customer requirements. So my point, I probably haven't given you enough breadcrumbs for, what scale should I use actually? So is it 0 to 4? Is it 0 to 10? Is it 139? I don't know, right? The point is that your team should make this an explicit part of doing this tool and make sure you agree on what these numbers mean, or symbols mean if you're going to use symbols, for your team. Okay? I would say here it's most common, the second level matrix, and probably early in the process, to use a 0 to 4 or something like that. Right? 0 to 10 implies you have a higher resolution understanding of whether a design satisfies a requirement or not. Make some sense? Right? So it's most common, the second level evaluation matrix, to do 0 to 4. And in this case, I just fill in the numbers. Right? It's quite preferable, quite often, to use symbols to represent these as well. Of course, we can get some numbers, so we can add up each column, right? We could take each column and see, kind of look at the maximum possible score it could have gotten, right? And say, well, divide by that and get some kind of relative percentage. So in this case, what this number here is kind of saying is that ice cream is 40% of a perfect dessert, based on the numbers we have in this table, right? And a chocolate chip cookie is 65% of a perfect dessert. Right. What are the weaknesses of the second level matrix? We kind of hit on a few of them already. Your idea, I think. Right, so we're still not considering which one of these customer requirements is, what's the relative importance of the customer requirements. So in this case, the second level matrix are all just weighted equally. Right. So you probably want to include that. Right, so we have no consideration of importance. So the third level adds in those importances. And these come from right from your house of quality too. Right, you develop these as part of developing your house of quality. So you go through the same process, look at the ice cream, decide what scale you could use. Quite often by the time you get to kind of loop through your process enough where you're starting to do a third level evaluation matrix, you are going to have enough information where your resolution on how well a design is doing is a little bit higher. So you see a third level evaluation matrix, it's most common to see 0 to 10. Okay. Yes? So the question was, why do we only use the rating on the third level? Remember that these are concept evaluation matrices, and these are actually part of the design process. Right? So while your initial house of quality will have some importances there, right, early in the process, you're probably not super confident, let's say, in what those importances are. But you still get through kind of the first loop through the process of designing the things, and okay, well, we want to look at the ideas we have and see if we can kind of combine some and things like that. Right. So you don't have a ton of confidence in those importances, so let's just leave them out for right now. So the evaluation is a part of the design process. Right. And that's a point we'll keep making as well. Right. So this is not just let's select the best design. This is look at the designs, which one's good, which one's bad. Can we combine them in some unique way to create a new design that's better? Those kind of things. Right. So go back to our chart. You fill it out. And similarly, we can get these totals, right? So in this case, we just take the weighted sum, right? So you do 5 times 7, 6 times 0, plus 9 times 3, plus 2 times 5, plus 1 times 6. Right? So you get the weighted sum of your column. And then you can look at the totals like we did before. Okay, so if we look at the weighted version of our customer requirements, our ice cream got even worse. Right, it's kind of point. It's 34% of a perfect ice cream, a perfect dessert. Right, it's one way to think about this number. Okay. We can get these numbers. We're engineers. We like numbers. I want you to remember, and I want you to kind of think about it this way, however. So a few points here. These numbers that you're getting out are only as good as the time you spent in the validity of these evaluations. Right? If you just guess at what these numbers are, There's no analysis or thought actually supporting what that choice should be. These numbers are pretty meaningless. Right? If you assign a 3 here without thinking about it too much, then this doesn't have much value. So the value, the real value, is not, in some sense, the numbers that come out of this, but in the thinking clearly about what each one of these should be, and in a clear, objective evaluation. Okay. Another point I want to make while we have this up here. For what you do in this class and at this point in your career, some of these, in terms of your final project, are probably going to be based in a little bit of gut feeling. We think this is going to perform well at this area. Right? You get to later in your career. You get to senior design even. Right? This analysis, this score here, better have some engineering analysis to support it. Right? So if you tell your customer, this thing scores a 3 here, you better have something to support why that's a 3. Beyond, oh, that's just what we think it is. Okay? It's a 3 because of this material properties analysis. Here's the statics, here's the FEA, that kind of thing. Okay, everybody seeing that? These are not just kind of gut feeling choices of what these numbers should be. There needs to be some kind of analysis behind them, right? Particularly as your career progresses. Okay? And the higher quality of that analysis, the more confident you can be in these numbers, the more confident you can be that you're choosing or recommending the right design eventually. Okay, again, much of the utility is thinking objectively about that evaluation process. It is part of the design process, even when you get to the third level. You can look at that, look at your third level, oh, our designs are not performing as well as we'd like. What can we do to make a better design? Can we combine these things in a unique way? Right. We also want to think about the numbers in this sense, that you don't want to talk about your design, and this is the recommended design, this is our chosen design, when you get to the end of the conceptual design phase, because it got the highest score. Right? That's not why it's the recommended design. It's the recommended, it got the highest score because it's the best design. Right? So the evaluation matrix supports your choice and recommendation of a design. It's not the reason for it. Right? It's a little bit of a distinction, a little bit of a fine distinction, but there is a difference there. Right? And like we've been talking over the past few minutes, these are actually living documents. Right? So we talked about your house of quality changing over time as your understanding of the customer evolves. Well, if those importances change, that's going to filter all the way through to your evaluation matrix. So your understanding of customer changes, maybe what design's best for that customer changes as well. Okay. We've also picked one quite early, which was nice, that you can identify weaknesses using these tools and otherwise good designs. Hey, this design is really good at all this stuff, but not so good at these 3 customer requirements. How can we make those 3 better? Oh, actually, design number 6 is really good at those. Can we steal some of those ideas over here? Okay. So these are not just they're not concept selection, they're concept evaluation. They're part of the process. Okay. Which means that you get to iterate on those tools, like pretty much all the tools we talk about in this class. They're living. You're using them over and over again, iterating on them. Okay. All right, questions? That's the core of our design tools we'll talk about. Okay. Questions about those? Okay.